Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick this week, which means Simon Marks is in for Ben Kentish. But either way, Sheila Fogarty's here now.
I'm here for myself. Thank you for and for everybody else.
Yeah, thanks, me, myself, James. And I.
Me, myself, et moi. At three today, this story has astounded me. Two police officers have been cleared of assault charges after pepper spraying and batoning a 92-year-old wheelchair-using amputee who was brandishing a knife, serious matter, in a care home. All of it took place within 90 seconds of the police walking through the door. The man was suffering from delirium. Surely there were alternatives to what they did. At two, LBC reveals the scale of knives in schools and what it's doing to our kids. Not a pretty picture at all, I should warn you. But I want to start with Keir Starmer's speech, particularly the comments about Nigel Farage. Is one commentator right when they say he needs to just be serious, not unserious, and govern, not protest, to deal with Nigel Farage?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, school children say they believe social media may be partly responsible for a rise in pupils taking knives into the classroom. Figures seen by LBC show there were 2,300 such cases in the last full school year, up 60% in 2 years. That amounts to 12 pupils being found with knives every day across the UK. Shadow Community Secretary Kevin Hollinrake says it's a terrible phenomenon.
It's something we must stamp out in our society. And I think it's partially because I think people feel less safe. It's partially because of this gang culture that's arisen within not just in this country, but other countries too. And we've got to stamp it out.
The government has set a target of halving knife crime over the next decade. The Prime Minister has hit out at Reform UK's economic policies, describing them as a mad experiment. Earlier this week, Nigel Farage says his party would U-turn on the two-child benefit cap by scrapping the limit and reinstate winter fuel payments. If his party was elected, he says they'd also raise the basic rate tax threshold. But Sir Keir Starmer says he's promising tax cuts without a funding plan, just like one of his predecessors.
Billions upon billions of completely unfunded spending. Precisely the sort of irresponsible splurge that sent your mortgage costs, your bills, through the roof. It's Liz Truss all over again.
Reform says the comments are a desperate attack from a party behind in the polls. There's further uncertainty for businesses after a US court blocked Donald Trump's trade tariffs. Judges ruled the president overstepped his authority when he used emergency powers to impose the levies. The White House says it will appeal. Israel says it will establish 22 new Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. Some 700,000 Israeli settlers live in the West Bank and East Jerusalem in communities considered illegal under international law. And complaints about substandard living conditions in social housing have risen fivefold in as many years. The Housing Ombudsman has warned that simmering anger about the poor state of homes could lead to social disquiet. It dealt with nearly 6,400 disputes between residents and social landlords in England in the year to March. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 5 points at 87.31. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, mostly cloudy and dry for southern and eastern areas. Patchy rain elsewhere, but brighter and warm in the southeast. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Got an unexpected message, phone call or email that claims to be from HMRC? Take care. It could be a criminal pretending to be us. To protect yourself, never rush to share personal information or part with your money. Learn to recognise signs of a scam, such as being put under pressure to share bank details. And if something seems fishy, report it to HMRC straight away by searching HMRC Scams on gov.uk. Protect, recognise, report.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, has responded head on to at least some of what Nigel Farage has been saying about his party reform and what he or they would offer in government. This is just a day after the latest YouGov poll put them ahead of the Labour Party when it came to people's voting intentions. But, you know, that's a long way off, isn't it? A general election, I mean. What I want to get a sense of from you today, once Agis Hombre, our political correspondent, has gone through precisely what the Prime Minister said, is how you think Keir Starmer should, and so far is, responding, should be, and so far is responding to the reform threat, and to Nigel Farage in particular. Surveys of who the British public want to be Prime Minister, Keir Starmer still very much ahead of Nigel Farage on that front. But you can't deny the pressure that reform is placing on, well, certainly the two main political parties, if not the Lib Dems as well. We'll talk to Professor Sir John Curtis in just a few moments. But first, Agis Hombre, LBC's political correspondent, has been with the Prime Minister listening to what he said. Talk us through it, Agis, if you would.
Of course, Sheila. So, yes, I was at the speech in the Northwest at this factory that makes the technology to make glass. And basically, most of the speech, the majority of the speech, was a staunch attack on Nigel Farage. This, of course, as you mentioned, followed this press conference from Nigel Farage earlier in the week, where he announced a raft of policies, including the fact that he would ditch winter fuel that Labour had announced last year. He would scrap the two-child benefit cap. He also talked again about changing the rate that people pay income tax to £20,000. So that was the context of this. But basically, Sir Keir Starmer wanted to really attack that, and he accused Nigel Farage of fantasy figures.
Now in government, we're once again fighting the same fantasy, this time from Farage. The same bet in the same casino that you can spend tens of billions of pounds on tax cuts without a proper way of paying for it. Using your family finances, your mortgages, your bills as the gambling chip on his mad experiment. And I can see that in keeping with my point, apparently he's in Las Vegas today at a casino.
So strong words there, accusing Nigel Farage of a mad experiment. Elsewhere, he also basically said this was Liz Truss take two. He also said he wouldn't be taking any lectures from Nigel Farage on who was more working class.
And in relation to the second part of your question, I don't need lectures from Nigel Farage on what it means to be working and working people. I know what it means to work 10 hours a day in a factory 5 days a week. And I know that because that is what my dad did every single working day of his life. And that's what I grew up with. So I don't need lessons from Nigel Farage about the issues that matter most to working people in this country.
Now, Sheila, it felt like a slightly strange speech. It felt like the kind of speech you might make if you were in opposition and you really need to attack the party in government to try and get some coverage. Sir Keir Starmer is the Prime Minister. Basically, anything he says will get coverage. And he doesn't really need to be elevating Nigel Farage or really talking about Nigel Farage at all. So they have obviously made the gamble that this is the way they think that they will do best at the next general election. But of course, the next general election is 4 years away, probably. And I did ask him, are you not worried that people ask why you're holding a press conference about Nigel Farage 4 years out from a general election instead of focusing on your plans for the country? Unfortunately, Sheila, he did not respond to that. But I did also ask him about these Reform UK adverts in Scotland, which Anas Sawa has called poisonous.
What we've seen with Reform in Scotland in relation to this particular video is manipulation. And it is, as ever, with Reform and Nigel Farage, trying to divide people with a toxic divide and to poison our politics. And I think our politics is above that. And that's why I think it's absolutely right that Anas Sawa has called this out for what it is. It is toxic divide. It is introducing poison into our politics. And that is exactly what turns people off politics. And that is why restoring trust to politics is so important to my project and the project of Scottish Labour.
On trust in politics, just remind people what happened with the Anas Sawa situation there. Some people might not be familiar with it, Agis.
Yes, so this, there is a by-election coming up in Scotland, and Reform UK put out an advert which claimed that the Scottish Labour leader Anna Sarwar would prioritise the Pakistani community. The ad has been deemed by the SNP to be racist. The SNP and Labour have demanded that it's removed from social media, and it shows a clip of Anna Sarwar calling for more representation of Scots with South Asian heritage, although he did not say in that advert that he would prioritise any group.
Right, thank you very much indeed for that clarification. Aggie Chambray, LBC's political correspondent. We'll leave it there because there's obviously some wind interference there. Can I just say, before we speak to Professor Sir John Curtis, if Keir Starmer's people listen to this programme, and I'm sure some of them do, maybe referring to your political opponents with the word Mr. or their full name might be a start in not poisoning our politics. I think he's not the only one who does it. It's really rife, even in the House of Commons now, people referring to each other or referring to other people with their surname, just their surname, as though they're some kind of convict. I'm afraid I think that's the beginnings of poisoning our politics, and it might seem like a small thing, but I don't think it is. I sometimes on air mistakenly do it and then correct myself and give a person's full name or call them Mr. or Mrs. or whatever. But it's just, I think it's very harsh personally. But anyway, that's by the by. Professor Sir John Curtis, give you your full title, polling expert and professor of politics at the University of Strathclyde. Let's go back to the drawing board of exactly what people are saying about why Reform appeals to them, particularly over Labour.
Well, the truth is that Nigel Farage is very effectively milking what we might call the niche market. Basically, the people who are supporting Reform are overwhelmingly people who believe in Brexit. In fact, support for Reform is running at over 50% amongst those people who voted Leave back in 2016, who currently have a political preference. They are therefore also the people who are more concerned about immigration. They are generally people who are rather more socially conservative. And they are therefore the kinds of people, just to refer to the debate that now is going on in the wake of the by-election that's going place in Scotland, they are the people, for example, who would be more sceptical about so-called equalities policies that are designed to try to ensure that ethnic minorities and women and people from a variety of backgrounds perhaps need to be given a fairer crack of the whip at getting good jobs. And that's something that Reform are certainly rather more sceptical about. So it's a very distinctive section of our society, but it's enough given that more broadly we are looking at a public which has basically, well, they've not forgiven the Conservatives, right? So the Conservatives are still suffering from very severe reputational damage. And confidence in the ability of this government to handle the economy, to handle the health service, has gone in a fairly negative direction fairly quickly. So we've got an unhappy electorate who are unhappy with the existing government. They are unhappy with the previous government. So there was always a question in these circumstances where they would go. Well, for those at least whose broad values and perspective on the world is similar to that of Nigel Farage, the answer to that question is proven to be Mr. Farage.
And this notion, I heard it from Philip Collins, the political commentator and academic, yesterday on social media, where he said all Starmer needs to do, I mean, I'm sure he accepts it's not straightforward, but all he needs to do is be serious in the face of somebody unserious, in his view, and govern, not protest. Is it as simple as that?
I don't think it is as simple as that, because I think we have to ask ourselves, why is it that Nigel Farage, I mean, Nigel Farage has been making the political weather this week, both north and south of the border. It's his talks, it's his social media upon which everybody else is focused. And the point is that Mr. Farage, whatever you think of his views, is a charismatic politician who speaks in a way that for some people, at least, they understand, they follow, and they find attractive. And the truth is that Mr. Farage is really the only charismatic political leader in a current field of leaders which, shall we say, is not sparkling with that particular quality. And to that extent, Lisa, I think, yes, Keir Starmer certainly needs to deliver. But I think one of the criticisms one can make of the current Prime Minister is that he seems to assume that so long as he does deliver, eventually, he will succeed in the next election. Whereas I think most people would say, oh, no, you also have to persuade people
all
that
the time
you have delivered, and that therefore, to that extent, at least, you do have to advocate for what you're doing and what indeed you have eventually achieved. You can't assume that people will take it for granted if indeed you do succeed in turning things around.
And this question of sectarianising our politics, let me step back from that word for the purposes of our conversation and talk about identitarian things creeping into our politics, perhaps. What do the polls and what does research tell us about that? Because it's clearly there, identity-based politics. And actually, politics always has an element of identity.
Why did many people vote for to leave the European Union? Because they feel strongly British or English, and they don't feel European. Identity is central to these arguments about sovereignty vis-a-vis the European Union. And the truth is that while the identity, the nationalism that the Scottish National Party, for example, promotes, has a very different quality to it. It's what we would call a civic nationalism rather than an ethnic nationalism. So some people would say that Nigel Farage is perhaps implicitly appealing to the white section of our population and perhaps not to those ethnic minorities, and this polling evidence suggests that, whereas the SNP tried to appeal to people irrespective of where they come from, so long as they're willing to regard themselves as people who are committed to Scotland. But there is still a sense there of identifying with Scotland and Scottishness as being a key part of their appeal. I mean, equally, if you go back, I mean, Labour Party, and we've heard Keir Starmer talking about working class, Labour Party historically was the party of the working class. It was the party that was much more popular amongst working class people. And people would say, I'm working class, therefore I vote Labour. Again, yeah. It was a sense of identity.
It's not new, is it? No, it's not new.
No, one of the ways in which our politics has changed is the Labour Party is, frankly, no more popular amongst working class people than it is amongst middle class people, where, by the way, reform is more popular amongst working class people.
And at the last general election, for example, because of the situation in Israel and in Gaza, We saw some Labour MPs lose their seats, or if not lose their seats, lose majorities and lose large tranches of their vote based on that issue, which is partly an identity issue, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, and more broadly, if you think about the arguments we're having about transgender, the arguments we're having about equalities policy, the arguments we're having about whether or not we should be proud of Britain's history, or whether we should be more acknowledging perhaps some of the, what some people regard as the negatives of our past, particularly the negatives of the British Empire, slavery, etc. These all tap into people's sense of identity. Mm. Identity is always partly, at least, what politics is about. It's also about delivery. And at the end of the day, the central challenges I think facing this government are to do with the economy and to do with public services. But look, all politicians in all sorts of ways appeal identity. For those of us who are somewhat older, some of us remember Harold Wilson. How did Harold Wilson begin to try and indicate the way in which somebody who, you know, was frankly an Oxford academic was able to demonstrate and appeal to the working class? Well, it was let be known that he used HP Source. Now, HP Source, of course, we know, is something that's rather more commonly used amongst people in working class households. That's one of the ways in which politicians use
identity.
And
from memory, it has
to make a connection.
And from memory, doesn't it have a little icon of Parliament on the label?
It does indeed, absolutely, yes.
I've never liked the stuff personally, but I remember the little icon on the front of the jar. Thank you very much indeed, Professor Sir John Curtis, polling expert and Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde. Just a quick statement here from Reform UK in light of what Keir Starmer has been saying. They described the latest intervention as, quotes, a desperate attack from a party 8 points behind in the polls. We take no economic lectures from Keir Starmer. They go on to say Labour's manifesto promised £10 billion per year of increased spending. Their first budget raised spending by £70 billion, and they have added another £30 billion, says Reform UK, since then for the Chagos deal. So, if you are a Labour supporter or were in the last election, is Keir Starmer doing enough in the face of, particularly in the face of the reform threat? Is he doing enough for you? Is he doing enough to convince you to continue, stick with them, give them a hearing, give them time in government to show that they are serious, to show that they can govern, and maybe prove that speech right, that Nigel Farage is a mere protester, not a governor? Or have they lost you already in terms of that reform pressure that's being brought to bear? Is Keir Starmer doing enough in the face of Nigel Farage's political assault on him? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. You can text 84850. It's 119.
This is LBC.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off six or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores and lines, subject to availability. Excludes Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
There's not many things as epic as jumping over a volcano in a monster truck, or even swinging over a crocodile-infested river. But 15% off when you spend £15 at Mackey's comes pretty close. Deal drop. Download the app to redeem all week. 18 plus app only. One use per week until the 1st of June. Minimum spend and discount only applies to food and drink. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
The best family time is family holiday time. And with EasyJet Holidays, brilliant summer package holidays start from just £299 per person, with millions of free kids' places available. Search EasyJet Holidays. Get out there. Price based on 2 adults for 5 nights, limited availability, 1 free child place for every 2 full paying adults sharing, at all protected, T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Sheila Fogarty. Call 0345 6060 973. Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Text 84850.
I think this has got to be one of those moments for Keir Starmer where he, in the, as well as being in the business of governing, and I think Philip Collins is right to say get on with governing and show that you are governing, keep people with you in that process, which I don't think Labour has been great at in terms of their messaging up until now. Maybe they're learning on the job in that sense. But I think he does have to just keep showing. It's show rather than tell, isn't it? And show that you are governing, show that you are working. But the thing is, Nigel Farage has a particular way of appealing to people that is very effective politically. And I don't think Keir Starmer necessarily has that set of skills, which is why I think there is almost always strength in just being yourself. You can't be someone else. He can't do the Farage. So he should do the Starmer. And then people are going to have to decide whether they take it or leave it. Tom's call from Colchester. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Sheila. Let me caveat by saying I'm not a Labour supporter at the last general election, but I am someone who's had a keen interest in politics, so much so that I did an A-level 20-odd years ago in politics.
Yeah.
So my opinion really is that Keir Starmer is actually playing right into Nigel Farage's hands. Nigel Farage has positioned himself and the Reform Party as the anti-establishment party. And the people that follow that party are people that have looked at the status quo and it hasn't necessarily worked for them. It's why they voted Brexit, because they wanted that change from the status quo. And every time a Sir Knight of the Realm of the establishment attacks Nigel Farage, within the minds of Reform voters, that just confirms to them that they're backing the right horse. And where Keir Starmer's getting that wrong is if you look at the statistical data that Sky News produced last week, they did a poll of people who voted Labour at the last election, and overwhelmingly, 7 times more people were defecting to the Lib Dems, Greens and Independents than were saying they're going to defect to Reform. And then when they looked further into that data and extrapolated it out, it actually showed of the Reform voters that were polled within that poll, that actually that 6% were the only ones that had ever voted Labour in their voting life. And so my thing is that not only is Keir Starmer kind of playing into Nigel Farage's hands perfectly and creating that confirmation to Reform voters that they're backing the right horse, but actually Keir Starmer's backing the wrong horse as well, because he shouldn't be chasing the votes of such a minuscule amount of people when overwhelmingly that 7 times more is much more important in terms of volume at a general election.
But is it minuscule? Is it a minuscule amount of people? Or is it, as we saw in the general election, some key voting blocks, if that's the right term for it?
I mean, it is minuscule. I mean, if you're looking at 6% and then you're seeing 7 times more, if you lose those 7 times more votes at a general election across the board in all constituencies, the 6% are never going to make up for it. So he really is backing the wrong horse, in my opinion.
But the thing is, in the persuasion, in the business of persuasion, which is what politics is, there are, I think there are very few voting, there are very few voters, if I were a politician or a political leader, there are very few voters I would openly reject outright. You know, they would be the worst of the worst. And I think you, so you do as a politician have to respect people, even if what they're, even if, you know, I spoke to somebody like Lisa Nandy after the Brexit vote. I remember her constituents going, voting wildly against what she wanted from that referendum. And she was one of the first to say, we've got to accept this. She didn't chase the second referendum or that. And she just said, I have to listen to them. And I said to her, have you told them that they're going to lose GPs and teachers because of this? Have you told them that their lives are going to be worse very quickly because of this? And she said, yes, I have. And they did it anyway. And I can't just dismiss them out of hand because they're my constituents. So you have to treat people with respect, even if you think they're getting something wildly wrong, don't you?
Well, I'm not saying ignore them completely. What I'm saying is stop attacking Nigel Farage and the party in a negative manner. So in framing in what you said with Lisa Nandy, in telling people the negatives, people know potentially how negative things are. We don't want negatives. What we want is solutions to problems that then become positives so that people can understand the positive direction that you're moving in. I think personally, I think one of the big failures of Brexit, and I was guilty of it at the time myself, was that we just kind of treated people as if they were stupid and saying, you're an idiot, and deriding them for their political opinion, rather than showing them, actually, these are the positive things that you get from being in the EU, and that's why you should consider your opinion.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised to see Jenny Jones, the Green politician Jenny Jones, saying in an interview the other day, I literally cannot understand why anybody would vote Reform. And I thought, can't you? I can.
Well,
listen to them.
I mean, I can.
They've told you what they think the appeal is. Whether they're right or not is secondary, but they've told you what they think they're getting.
I come from a working class background, council estate in Salford in Greater Manchester originally.
Yeah.
And my teenage years, we were one of the most deprived areas in the country because of the way that things had changed through the 80s and 90s.
And you still have problems there, don't you?
Well, they do still have their problems there. I live in Colchester now, but I can see that if I hadn't have got the education that I did and then moved to where I have and had the career that I had, I could potentially understand why one from that area might think, well, you know, we voted Labour all our lives because that's exactly what has happened throughout the entire of my adult lifetime. Salford always has been a Labour Party stronghold. We voted Labour all our lives. And actually, things have not got that great in terms of progression. I mean, to give Manchester and Salford its dues, it is better than when I was growing up. There has been regeneration. There is money coming in. So things are changing. And
they are. I spent 2 years there with the Beeb. So I know. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I can understand if you're part of the left behind community within that. So if you're not part of the regeneration or you're not seeing the employment that you are able to get or you are not seeing the things change that you need to change to better your life, I can understand even though money is coming in.
And you have your benefits taken off you. You have your benefits taken off you. And your mum has her winter fuel taken off her.
Or you're potentially disabled and you're being told basically, well, we're going to take your PIP off you or we'll make your PIP harder for you and, you know, you should just go and work and there are literally no jobs that you can do because of your health condition. I can understand why those people would be then gravitated towards someone who's saying, I'm listening to you directly, the people that are not being listened to, I'm listening to you and that's why I will vote for you. I think what Labour need to do, if they want to win the next election, is start making meaningful change that people can feel in their pocket and can actually then start to think, the government are doing something for me as an individual. But also they need to be more positive in their outlook, not negative. To say that Nigel Farage's plans are mad or that they're not costed, well, at this moment in time, nobody really cares about that because he's moving in the way economically in terms of removing the child benefit cap, looking at the winter fuel allowance, possibly reversing the PIP cuts. These are things that people want to hear because these marginalised people are thinking, well, that would really have an impact on my life and help me to have a better quality of life. Yeah. So I can empathise with Reform voters. I just think the established parties are really going about it the wrong way with the attack dogs.
Keep listening and keep talking to them, yeah. Thanks, Tom. I want to make time for Anna in the Isle of Wight. Thanks very much for your call. Hello, Anna.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I do agree with your last caller that to attack Nigel Farage is adding fuel to the bonfire.
What do you want to hear instead?
I want to hear what Labour are doing that's so wonderful. I'm a Labour voter, a Labour supporter. I canvassed for Labour. I leafleted for Labour, and I was thrilled when they got in. But I think they've given reform an open goal with removal of the winter fuel allowance, with the benefit caps. They've just opened up the floodgates where people say, well, I didn't vote for this. I voted for change, but I didn't vote for it to be made worse off. And I agree that by attacking Farage, it's giving him publicity. No, I know that if reform, he's made no secret the fact that he wants to be the next prime minister. And what he doesn't say is that should he get him, he'll be means testing the state pension, and he would also want to introduce an American style insurance system to replace the NHS. He doesn't mention that, but what he does say is what people want to hear. And personally, I think he's got the charm of a used car salesman. No respect to a used car salesman, but he's got charisma. It's not a nice charisma. But he does. He's a popular.
But a lot of people warm to him. And I tell you what he does have is both in person, obviously I've met him over the years professionally and interviewed him a few times, compared to, not all, but compared to a lot of current politicians, he does speak directly to you. You know what I mean? I mean, he may be lying through his teeth half the time. He may be talking nonsense in one's view. Sometimes I think in my view he is. But he's able to communicate is what I'm saying. Now, there are politicians out there who can. But for a long time now, I've thought that so many of them are desperately careful all the time. And I have to be careful when I broadcast, but not so careful that you end up sounding like a robot or you fail to engage properly in a conversation with a person. And, you know, a bit more fluency, a bit more on the stump, spirit of the stump from our politicians would be no bad thing. And he has that in pints, doesn't it? Literally pints.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, one of the things I think is Labour should be shouting from the rooftops what they've accomplished, the positive things they've accomplished, and they don't. All we hear is the negative things that have happened, and furthermore, trying to out-Farage in certain cases.
And that's a mistake, says Anna. Thank you, Anna, in the Isle of Wight. Is Keir Starmer trying to out-Farage? He can't, can he? He hasn't got that to do it. So he should just do Starmer and govern and be serious. But tell us about it and persuade us and convince us. That's what Anna seems to be saying, and our previous caller as well, Tony. Do keep your calls coming. Are you convinced by Keir Starmer's response to Nigel Farage and his credibility? 0345 6060 973. I'll talk to Kate Fisher, LBC's US correspondent, in a moment about that move by the US federal court to block Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs, another blow to his economic policy. It's 1:32, time for the headlines. First from Amelia Cox.
It's emerged a 9-year-old was among those injured when a car was driven into crowds at Monday's Victory Parade in Liverpool. Police are continuing to question a 53-year-old man on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving. Figures seen by LBC show a significant rise in the number of children being caught with knives in school. Cases are up 60% in the last 2 years to an average of 12 discoveries every day. And the White House says it's going to appeal after a New York court blocked Donald Trump's trade tariffs plans. Three judges say the president doesn't have the authority to use emergency powers to do it. LBC weather, mostly cloudy and dry for southern and eastern areas. Patchy rain elsewhere, but brighter and warm in the southeast. A high of 23 degrees.
LBC.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My claim group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My claim group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
With
Little Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6th, 25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Redknapp. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gamblerware.org.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World. We're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Before I get back to your calls, I want to talk to Kate Fisher, LBC's US correspondent. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Good to have you on the programme again, so soon after we did the other day.
Great to be on.
This story from the US federal court, I must admit, from my perspective, maybe not yours, it kind of came out of nowhere. They've blocked President Donald Trump's huge tariffs, a bit of a blow to his economic policies.
Yeah, that's right. And it is a really little known court, the Court of International Trade, and it was a three-judge panel, one of whom was appointed by Donald Trump. And yeah, it was a pretty significant ruling. It's given the administration 10 days to step back those country-specific tariffs, the ones that were announced on so-called Liberation Day. The industry-specific ones remain. They were implemented under a different law, but it's the ones that were implemented under this 1977 law that Donald Trump used to give him authority to impose these tariffs because he said there was a national emergency because of trade deficits with other countries. This court is saying that's not the case. Those kind of decisions and laws need to be made by Congress, and the executive branch does not have the authority to do that. The White House has clearly pushed back on this, saying that the White House does have the authority to do this because it is a national emergency, and that a federal judge does not have the authority to overturn something the president has done. And this is an argument the White House has used over several different legal situations it's had where federal judges have pushed back against things that Donald Trump's trying to do.
At the time that the decisions were made, quite a few commentators were saying, some to me and some just generally, were saying, well, of course, Congress has to approve this. There seemed to be a kind of assumption that Congress now is too weak and too in his thrall to do anything other than approve this. Is that a fair assessment or not?
Yeah, well, certainly Congress is controlled in both chambers by the Republicans, his party, and therefore that makes things very difficult for anyone wanting to oppose what he is doing. Certainly Democrats in Congress, Democratic senators launched legislation saying exactly that, you know, we have the authority for this, not the executive branch, but it didn't go anywhere because they do not have the majority. But this is the third branch of US government, the judiciary, now stepping in and saying, this is the whole point of the American system, the checks and balances, that the executive branch cannot do this. It is something that only Congress has the say over. The issue is, at the moment, Congress doesn't have anyone that doesn't want to do what Donald Trump... It doesn't have enough people that don't want to do what Donald Trump is doing. But certainly the court has the ability to stop the executive branch doing something it deems to be unlawful.
And yet we've seen time and again with Donald Trump that courts end up seeming a bit toothless in the face of him, don't they?
Yeah, and this is interesting that this one of these judges, as I say, one was appointed by Reagan, one Obama, and one Trump. So it is truly bipartisan, including one appointed by Donald Trump. Okay. But he is already appealing it. It's likely to end up, as these things do, at the Supreme Court. But analysts that I've been listening to this morning and reading suggest that probably the Supreme Court would side with this three-judge panel of trade judges rather than the president if it ends up there. It's also should be noted that he is able to implement some of these tariffs through other long-standing statute that already exists. It takes a lot longer and is more complicated, and it's not as easy as just issuing this executive order.
And based on their early statement since this ruling, they seem to be going along the national emergency line, don't they? It's not for, I'm quoting the Trump administration now, it's not for unelected judges to decide how to properly address a national emergency, which is what he says the trading status of the United States has become.
Absolutely. Once again, it's, as I said, it is the kind of repeat retort from the Trump administration. If the courts challenge what they're doing, they say it is not for a federal judge. What power does a federal judge have over the president? The president's power should overcome all of this, which again takes you back to the argument over the checks and balances and the division of power in the US. Donald Trump constantly pushing to make the executive branch more powerful than the other two.
Thanks very much indeed, Kate. Kate Fisher, LBC's US correspondent. Just before I get back to your calls, a quick update here from Merseyside Police about the events on Bank Holiday Monday. They say the youngest victim injured in the Liverpool parade crash is 9 years old. They added that the oldest is 78, with all 79 people who were injured understood to be British. Seven remain in hospital in a stable condition. Merseyside Police declined to say what drug the 53-year-old man arrested over the incident is alleged to have taken. You remember in the press conference on Tuesday, they alluded to one of the charges. He was arrested on suspicion of three charges, one being unfit to drive because of drugs, but they didn't say then which drug, and they haven't yet. They have until later this evening to question the man from West Derby, which is an area of Liverpool I grew up in. It's about, I'd say it's about 4 miles, 5 miles, if that, from the city centre where the incident happened. Simon has called from Southampton to carry on our conversation about Keir Starmer's response and his approach, really, to the threat posed by Nigel Farage's Reform UK party. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Sheila. The problem we've got is communications.
Is what, sorry?
Is communications.
Right.
This is what I want to see. And this is what I think is the solution, okay? So, a problem in this country where the right-wing press does what the right-wing press does, and Farage is able to spread his message, and he gets listened to, which leaves Labour always on the back foot. What I want to see is a weekly COVID-style conference where the government has an opportunity to tell us what they've done this week, why they've done what they've done, what they're going to do next week. And then that gives then journalists an opportunity to ask questions. We ask a question, and then everything is out in the open and everybody knows where they stand and what is happening.
I see what you mean about, there's a bit of a problem with our communication, Simon, because your phone's cutting out a bit. I see what you mean about the way the right-wing press behaves towards Keir Starmer and would towards probably any Labour Prime Minister. But, you know, I do news every day. I'm constantly broadcasting elements of, or in total, government press conferences, interviewing ministers from the government, interviewing the Prime Minister, interviewed Rachel Reeves a week or so ago. You know, it's not like they are ignored, and it's not like they are entirely misrepresented every time that Keir Starmer opens his mouth. That simply isn't true. You know, they are the government, and they get priority, in a sense, of coverage because they are the government. So I think there's a danger in, if this is true of Keir Starmer, I don't know that it is, but I think there's a danger in feeling sort of put upon or badly done by simply because some people are doing what they always do, which is to berate a Labour government. You know, there's a wider media landscape than just newspapers and just right-wing newspapers. There's a wider media landscape than that. I'm not underestimating the power that they still have, but I don't think it's fair to suggest that the government isn't being seen or heard or listened to or questioned. I mean, I'd welcome that kind of press conference as often as possible to question ministers or the Prime Minister, but I'd also rather they governed with that time and got things sorted. But that you're right, that they do have to still deliver and tell people what they're delivering and why some of the tough choices are made. They need to do that, I think, better and more often than they have been. Thanks, Simon, for your call. Sorry to leave it there because it was just a bit of a tricky line. Thanks. It's 1:45.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Here's the tale of the tape. In the blue corner, you have a fairly burly 51-year-old police officer, Stephen Smith, who has a pepper spray and extendable nightstick. With him is the 36-year-old police officer, Rachel Camato, who has a taser. Both of them have stab vests. In the other, you have a 92-year-old man in a wheelchair with one leg and a 4-inch butter knife. I warn you, this is distressing.
Donald, yeah. Put it down!
This is a day of utter shame for the police. The fact that they were cleared at Southwark Crown Court I find truly extraordinary, but they will now face disciplinary proceedings. It can only hope that they're both booted out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
Summer is precious, so make this the summer with EasyJet Holidays. Book the perfect package holiday from just £299 per person at hand-picked 4- and 5-star hotels. Search EasyJet Holidays. Get out there. Price based on 2 adults for 5 nights, limited availability, adult protected, T's and C's apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted, but then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At Wickes, save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £23, now £15. Feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off 6 or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores online, subject to availability. Excludes Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
If you were listening to that trail just a moment ago for Nick Ferrari at breakfast, that same story I'm very keen to talk about after three on this programme, because it's a long time since a story has left me quite so literally open-mouthed when I was reading the details. When I first sort of quickly scanned the details, I thought, you know, knives, difficult. This is a 92-year-old disabled man, had one leg amputated, sitting in a wheelchair at a care home, and two officers who pepper sprayed him and tasered him in order to get off him, I suppose, a knife. Initially, I thought, well, it sounded over the top to me, but I thought, you know, knives can be difficult, you know, these blades that there are out there. But then when I saw the knife, and as Nick accurately describes it, as a butter knife, and I know even a butter knife could cause harm, you know, used with enough force and intent, but I'm almost certain, and then I know you might think this is easy to say, but I'm almost certain that if I had been called, just as myself, not as an officer, to that room, I could have got that gentleman to put that knife down. Almost certain of it, without pepper spraying him or hitting him or harming him in any way. And even if I was proved wrong about that, that a gentler approach didn't work, you know, from a safe distance, I get that a knife is a knife and it can cause harm. Even if I was proved wrong about that, I would have thought that if you're dealing with a one-legged 92-year-old man in a wheelchair who's suffering from delirium, and he has a knife pointed at you and other people, a butter knife, I would have thought that your opening gambit wouldn't be aggro. Your opening gambit would be, his name was Donald, you know, your opening gambit would be gentler than that. Persuasion. Can I get your wife to come and visit? Can I get your daughter? Come on, do you need a drink? Do you need some food? What can we do for you? You know you don't want to hurt anybody. Come on, should we play Monopoly? Whatever, you know that man. You care for him in a care home. The idea that didn't come across in Nick's trail, this whole incident, once the police came through the door, took 80 to 90 seconds to be complete. So they took less than 2 minutes at a distance from this man. He wasn't an imminent threat to them or anybody else. Less than 2 minutes, 90 seconds, they were tasering a 92-year-old one-legged man in a wheelchair because he was brandishing a butter knife. I'm serious now. Come on, we talk about that at three. Even if we set aside the two officers and what we might think of them and let the professional standards investigation take its course, these weren't kids. These were in their mid-30s and their 50s, these two officers. That says a lot about police training and police supervision, doesn't it? Whatever happened to softly, softly? Whatever happened to that? Talk about that at three. Mark has called from Crawley. Hello, Mark. We're talking about Nigel Farage and Keir Starmer's response to him.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you for taking my call. I don't mind a bit of name calling, a bit of playground in politics. It shows Sir Keir's got probably a little bit of a sort of colour in his cheeks. But at the same time, I think it's right to call into question economic policies and costing and funding. The thing with the right-wing parties is they usually take very complicated things and make them into simple stories. And that started way back in the days of sort of Ronald Reagan. So I'm fine with that. I don't mind that at all. I mean, this idea of, well, charisma. I mean, we all saw how well that worked with Mr. Johnson, didn't we? And what we got there with a guy who was charismatic. But it sort of astounds me that Mr. Farage wasn't there when Parliament was in session. He went on his holidays. He popped up yesterday to do his press conference, and now he's in America. How's that representing the people of Clacton?
In Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when he was MEP, I think, and representing British fishing rights, he was on the group for that in the European Union. He didn't bother to go to any of the meetings there either, but of course he took the money, and I believe he took the pension as well. So I think that probably says it all. He'll never be in power.
But the thing is, Mark,
he can say what he likes.
But the thing is, Mark,
that's the thing.
You know, I agree with what you said, but if the Starmers of this world, the Keir Starmers, I've done it myself, haven't I? You just reduced somebody to a surname.
Naughty Sheila.
I am naughty Sheila. I don't like it. And then sometimes I find myself doing it. I think it sounds brutal, and I don't like it. And I don't mean we have to be sort of, you know, sort of ancient manners with one another. But I just think that I wouldn't like to be referred to as Fogarty routinely, you know?
No.
It just makes you sound like a criminal. But anyway, that's by the by. I think the mainstream parties, though, and particularly the party in power, they do still have to take seriously why he is appealing. Even if 4 years from now, those people who are enjoying supporting Farage don't end up...
you have.
It's catching. That's why it's a dreadful contagion, Mark. It's
a
dreadful contagion.
Mister, much as I did call him Mr.
My liege. they have to be alive to his appeal, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, because he simplified things down to... And he knows in his heart, Mr. Farage, that he will never have to put those things into practice. I know they've got a lot of councillors now, and they've got a mayor, mm-hmm. and it'd be very interesting to see how they manage to try and get their agenda done in the cold machinery of what is classed as pretty boring everyday government. And I think, in a way, I see reform as rewarm. It's the old mince of UKIP with mashed potato on the top, a bit of cheese, and it's been slammed in the microwave and given a reheat.
What's for pudding?
And, yeah, sour grapes, I think, or buyer's remorse. But we'll see. I mean, Labour's got a huge majority. I don't say they should be complacent, but their communication should be better, I agree. They should be more punchy. Yeah. And I think Sakir's growing into it in parliamentary PMQs. He's had a couple of good zingers against Mr. Farage and so on and so forth. So I think he's beginning to develop a bit more personality.
PMQs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's entertaining, and obviously people in my line of business, we love to watch it and all the rest of it, but God, it's maddening and pointless sometimes, isn't it?
It is, but it's theatre. It's accessible theatre. It's
a bit sort of puritanical about this, but I don't think the poorest and the families who can't feed their kids have got time for theatre.
Maybe not, but they're probably, as I said, they're looking for a simpler solution.
They're looking for serious people.
Yeah, and Labour are serious. I don't think we can take that, whatever scarf you wear, I don't think you can take that away from them, that generally, especially Sakir, he's serious. Maybe a little too serious.
Should you ask him what a woman is?
Well, yeah, there is that. But then again, that's a difficult question, I think. I mean, an awful lot of people are probably thinking, well, no, I'm just saying, for a lot of people, they'd be glad that they wouldn't be asked that question.
I think the whole thing has been a mess. Get off the stage, I say.
Yeah, don't say any more. Don't make it worse than it already is, or when you sort of stick to it. But it's easy to stick to things when you're probably not going to have to be called in to actually do them.
Well, listen, thank you, Lord Mark of Crawley. It's been delightful to speak to you.
Thank you, my Lady Sheila.
Oh, my honour. Thank you. It wouldn't be great if we spoke like that all the time. I do think I should have been born in Austinian times, you know. When somebody touched your hand to help you up a carriage, and it was just like the biggest moment of your life. Amazing. That's by the by as well. Thank you, Mark. Luke has called from Orpington. Lord Luke of Orpington, hello.
Hello, Lady Faculty. How does that happen? Anyway,
if you give me a title, I'm yours, yeah.
Yeah, as I stand here making cheese on toast with a cup of tea,
excellent.
As many other people in the UK probably are. They're more concerned about what I've just had time to think about, the three Fs. Feelings, facts and faith in politics, right?
Yeah.
How do they feel? Now, I don't feel that, personally, Starmer cares or knows how we feel. People feel politically homeless. People feel a bit poorer. People feel like they're not being listened to. People feel like they don't want to be part of Europe, for example. Is he touching on those? No, not really. He's just interested in facts, and perhaps some of those aren't that good, and that's annoying other people. Whereas you look at someone like Nigel Farage, who's actually talking about how people feel. They want to feel British. They want to feel like they're in control of their borders. They want to feel like there's a future. They want to have faith in the future. And also, listening to Nigel Farage's speech the other day, because of people who criticised him, I wanted to hear for myself, I thought, wow, you know, he's talking about marriage, about giving them tax breaks. Fantastic. Because the fact is that statistically... children brought up in a family home of marriage do a lot better at school and less crime and things. So it's not saying you can't do it on your own, but, you know, that's just
statistics. Stability.
Yeah. And they want to have faith that they can practice the Christian Judeo faith and, you know, the sort of things that... Any faith, but yes, but I'm just saying Nigel touched on those. But look, at the end of the day, that's what I'm saying. So, and I don't get any feelings. I don't get any. You just see that like this, Keir Starmer is just concerned about facts moving forwards. And yes, he has fallen into a little pit.
Too technocratic is what you're saying.
Yeah, the people, what do people want now? They want to feel like they're, you know, there's a future in Great Britain. Let's make Britain great again. Mm. You know, they've seen it happen in America and the sort of and the happiness and joy and things.
Do you know who I've thought about a number of times in our conversation in the whole hour is Lord Heseltine, Sir Michael Heseltine. When he was in Margaret Thatcher's cabinet and he was battling for cities like Liverpool to not just be, left into managed decline, he did that feeling stuff really well, but it was real. He was saying that wouldn't vote for him. He was saying, "You're a city teeming with talent, but your leadership is terrible. Let me do something about that." And he did.
And a feeling of community, feeling of country, feeling of family. This is the three things that perform.
And hope.
Well, I think
people are feeling quite hopeless as well, or at least fearful. And that's got to be addressed by politicians for sure. Thank you very much, Luke. Good to talk to you, Luke, in Orpington. Coming up after the news at 2, we're going to get a special report about the scale of knives in schools and, worse still, the young age of kids taking knives to schools. It is not a pretty picture, I'm afraid. That's next. It's 2 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 2 o'clock, a 9-year-old was the youngest person injured during a crash at Liverpool's Premier League title parade on Monday. Detectives have been releasing more details about the 79 people caught up in the collision. LBC's Liam Gotting has been reading a statement from Merseyside Police.
The 53-year-old man they arrested at the scene is still in police custody. One of the things he's been questioned over is drug